Latvia Weekly Interviews with Joe Horgan and Otto Tabuns.
Latvian VCM, and welcome to a very, very special interview episode of the Latvia Weekly podcast. I am your host, Joe Horgan, for today, and seated across from me is somebody who should be very familiar to longtime listeners of the show. He is not only a contributor to the podcast, but also someone who I have interviewed in a number of contexts. That is Mr. Chris Ockenfelds, the Australian-born Latvian English teacher who you have heard quite a few times on the show, especially when he was doing his bike trip throughout Latvia. He did the entire pretty much circumference of Latvia a few summers ago. But the reason why I am having him on the show today is because he is currently serving as the head teacher in the project that Otto and I have talked to you quite a bit about over the last few episodes. That is the Integration for Ukraine project. That is a project that has been teaching free English lessons to Ukrainian refugees. And right now, we're kind of wrapping up the semester of the project because, as Otto and I have mentioned, the very generous funding that has come from the U.S. Embassy in Riga is just about to finish, and we're doing our best to try to raise funds to continue it as much as possible. But right now is a good time to kind of look back on how the project has gone and maybe hear some of Chris's experiences. So Chris, thank you so much for coming back on the show once again. How are you today?
Well, first of all, thank you very much, Joe. It's a pleasure to be here, and I'm feeling well. I've got a little bit of a cold, but basically nothing that would stop me from doing anything I want to do.
Yeah, that's a common, I think, theme this time of year. So Chris, now, when Otto and I were first coming up with the project, you were the very first person I thought of because, you know, not only do you care very deeply about the, you know, situation in Ukraine, but you also have, you know, family experience as, you know, somebody who was, you know, born to a, you know, refugee father. And, you know, certainly I know it's important to you. And also you have experience as an English teacher. You know, at that moment, you just kind of come back to Latvia. But what was kind of your first impression when I told you about the project and the potential that, you know, we might be able to get the funding to do something like this?
I was absolutely thrilled to be a part of it, or for the possibility of being a part of it. I couldn't wait. And particularly since people who know me and people who followed me on Facebook know that I have been a very passionate follower of the news in Ukraine and very critical of the people who are causing the problems in Ukraine. And the opportunity to be of assistance to Ukrainians means I can sort of put my money where my mouth is. I'm not just writing about it online. I'm actually actively doing something that can assist Ukrainian people here in Latvia.
Yeah, I remember, you know, we talked a lot, especially in the first few days of, you know, the wide-scale invasion, but also all throughout the summer as well. You know, I remember at one point that you were even kind of half considering, I don't know how serious you were about, you know, maybe thinking about trying to enter the foreign, you know, legion in Ukraine and, you know, maybe potentially going to Ukraine. So I know you were very, very serious about doing your best to help. So, you know, this was kind of a different way of helping. I mean, do you feel now, having had this experience, having worked with these students, that, I don't know, you feel satisfied with the part that you've done?
Yes, I do. I mean, the Ukrainian Foreign Legion wouldn't want me now. I'm too old and I'm not fit enough. But it's been an absolute delight to teach the Ukrainian students. One thing that really strikes me about the Ukrainians is, considering what's happened to their country, and some of them have left their houses in ruins, they have managed to show a very strong face, and they're a very upbeat group of people. Like, I feel humbled by how positive and optimistic they're remaining. I think if what's happened to Ukraine had happened to Australia, I don't think I'd be taking it so well. So it's a pleasure to deal with the students.
So when you found out that you were doing this and that you would have lessons basically every single day with, you know, different students of different levels, so how did you begin kind of preparing for this process? Like, what were kind of the most important things to kind of keep in mind, you know, not just, I guess, from a pedagogical perspective in terms of what kind of English to teach, but also, you know, in terms of sensitivity for their situation?
Yes, well, I must admit there were questions that were in my mind about what should I and talk about and what I should not talk about. So I approached it with caution. I thought, people who know what has happened in their country don't need it brought up to them and pushed in their faces. In the past, the lowest level of students I'd ever taught was pre-intermediate. This was the first time of teaching beginners, So that was a new experience for me because I knew I'd be teaching people whose command of English was really very basic. We're talking about people who might be able to say the cat sat on the mat and it doesn't go further than that. But also it's been fun teaching the beginners because they're the ones you see who make the biggest progress. But yes, at first I was sort of thinking maybe I should just say nothing about Ukraine and just focus on English. But what I've found is the students opened up to me very early. So after a while, I stopped worrying about it.
Yeah, you know, because you know, one thing that I've been telling people, especially kind of as part of the fundraising campaign that we're doing right now, is that it provides not just the opportunity to learn English, you know, and maybe gain some employability skills and also help with the process of integrating Ukraine, you know, with kind of a Western-looking future that they've chosen, you know, for themselves, but, you know, also giving people something, you know, constructive to do, especially people who might not have a job at the moment, you know, because it's, I can't imagine, you know, how it would feel to be in their shoes in this situation. So, you know, in terms of them kind of like opening up and, you know, do you think that there was kind of like a sense of community among each other, you know, of the people who came to the classes and, you know, took part in them frequently?
I think so, because they're all in the same boat together. Here they are, people who are out of their country of residence and citizenship. They've arrived in a place like Latvia. They've probably never had any plans in their life to come to Latvia. They had no reason why they would do that. And yet they're all in this boat of being in Latvia together and trying to establish new lives here. And I must admit, the ones I feel sorry for most are actually the teenagers. We do have some young students. I think our youngest one, she's about 16. I think this is a very, like for any adult, it's not easy to digest what's happened. But, you know, we have the saying, you can't put an old head on young shoulders. It's a lot to expect a teenager to digest what's happening in their country. And so I do feel sorry for them the most, but I've tried to sell the positive idea to them. I've said at the moment, you know, that big opportunities will come up, like the ability to go to university in Latvia. And I think for the moment, university for Ukrainian refugees is free in this country. And I've said to them, look, jump on every opportunity you can. You've got an opportunity here to actually become something and make something of yourself, even though it's in a very previously unexpected situation.
So in terms of the process of them, you know, coming to Latvia and living here and integrating here as much as possible, you know, did you hear any, you know, I don't know exactly how much of a chance you really got to talk with students, you know, before or after class or, you know, about things that weren't directly related to what you were, you know, doing in the lessons, but, you know, did you hear any examples of, you know, different challenges that they might have had or different, I don't know, you know, anything, you know, from their lives that was particularly difficult about adapting and kind of going through this process?
Yeah, I think one thing they're sort of thankful for is, I know Ukrainians have gone to different countries in Europe, but most Ukrainians, even if Ukrainians, their native language, most of them can speak Russian fluently. And Russian language is language you can get away with in Latvia. So they've found that they've been able to talk to civil servants, they've been able to talk to people in shops. They've always had the ability to communicate, unlike, say, Ukrainians who might have gone to Spain, where the average Spaniard doesn't know Ukrainian or Russian. Sometimes they don't even know English that well, and a lot of the Ukrainians don't necessarily have a command of English. They would have had lots of communication problems, but here they can get around that a bit. Some of the things they tell me, they almost tell me with a sense of comedy. Like one lady said her car's in Odessa, and she's trying to think of a way to get her car from Odessa up to Latvia. I recommended to it just get it sold in Odessa and buy another car in Latvia. I think it's too big a journey to get that car transported all the way here. But yeah, they do talk about things like that. And some of them have still got their job in Ukraine. There's some people who are doing their job online. One lady was a fashion designer and she does her designs here in Latvia and communicates with her employer by Zoom and whatever other package you would use if you're an online fashion designer. So her job has gone on as normal. There are others who've had to find work while they're here, sometimes working below their capability. There's some women who become babysitters, but they're actually engineers, things like that. They've still got to try and find their way. A lot of them are learning Latvian on the side, but I can proudly say they consider English a lot easier.
Yeah, well, you know, that's certainly in the eye of the beholder as well. You know, that's a whole different issue. But, you know, in terms of, learning English? I mean, have any kind of talked about what their particular motivation is for, you know, taking the class or for learning English? Is it, you know, a lot of people who want to improve it for employment or just to have kind of something to do or, you know, they're interested in language?
Yes, well, I find that every time I teach a class, whether it's been in Latvia or Cambodia or France, I've always asked students, why learn English? Why? Who singled this one language out to be the one that you're supposed to learn? And I've asked my Ukrainian students the same thing. A lot of them just cite the fact that it's an international language and this is an opportunity for them to learn it at no expense. But all of them know that here in Latvia, really, to survive in Latvia, you need to speak Latvian, but you also need English. A lot of jobs are difficult to get if you don't have English. If you want to work in hospitality here, no command of English, certainly you won't be getting a job in the old town of Riga, I can assure you on that one. So it becomes a necessary language alongside Latvian.
Now, I remember, Chris, you were telling me a while ago, I think this was about a month or two back, that there was kind of a funny situation that happened when you mentioned Borscht, which is, for people who have been to this region of the world before, is a traditional soup that's made from beet and a number of ingredients. I remember, actually, I was at my wife's parents' house recently, and we kind of had a little bit of a discussion over what is the correct way to make Borscht and, you know, what are the correct ingredients. So everyone certainly has their own take on that. But I remember you mentioned, Chris, that in class you had an interesting discussion about Borscht as well.
Yes. You know, it's funny. I don't remember how the topic of Borscht came up, but I asked my class, where does Borscht come from? And it was like hearing a whole bunch of people in unison yell, Ukraine. So the official word is Borscht Ukrainian. Now, one of my students, she told me something. I haven't checked this. I haven't fact checked it. I don't know if it's true. She seems to think UNESCO has recognized Borscht as Ukrainian. I don't know if that's true, but this is what she believed. I might look that up sometime. But definitely anything like that is Ukrainian. Solyanka, Ukrainian. You name it, it's Ukrainian.
Yeah, no, I mean, I can understand why that would be a matter of national pride, certainly, because and especially because those soups are very, very delicious. So. Now, Chris, in terms of going forward with, the lessons and everything, now, of course, when Otto and I started the project, you know, our hope was that they wouldn't be necessary, hopefully, anymore at this point, that, you know, maybe the war might be over and that everyone would have a chance to go back. But obviously, that's not the case right now. And it seems that given the situation that's happening, although the Ukrainian military has made some very impressive, you know, military gains, unfortunately, the strategy of the Russian military has changed to basically targeting civilian infrastructure and making life as difficult as possible in Ukraine. So it's very possible that we are going to see even more, you know, refugees coming to Latvia. But based on your, you know, experience with them over the last couple of, you know, weeks or so, I mean, what do you kind of feel the sense of their morale is about the situation overall?
Well, I would say this, if I was to judge Ukrainians by my Ukrainian students, they are optimists. All of them believe Ukraine will win this war. All of them believe the day will come when they'll go back. Most of them do actually want to return, particularly the married women. They just want to go back to their husbands. The teenagers might be more likely to stay on in Latvia and explore opportunities here. But I think the general feeling is optimism. But sometimes I thought they were too optimistic. We had a few students some months ago, I'm losing track of time, who decided Kiev is safe, we'll go back there. I think they lasted 1 week. It got hit by a rocket attack and they were straight back to Latvia. So I've sort of dropped my personal opinion to my students that they should never jump to conclusions about how safe it is in Ukraine, and they should approach any idea that areas of the country are safe with a lot of skepticism, because anything can happen at any moment.
So we've already done kind of two rounds of courses. They were both 8 weeks each, and that round has basically kind of just finished right now. You've been doing the last few classes of a conversational group that happens every Friday. But what would you say in general the demand is? I mean, does it seem like a number of the students are interested in continuing the courses also in January?
Yes, there are definitely students who want to continue. Generally speaking, the demand is still there. And a lot of students have been asking, can we continue? I haven't been able to give them an absolute confirmed answer. I've just assured them we're exploring every possible avenue to keep the classes going in January next year.
Yeah, we would definitely love to be able to do that. So, you know, luckily, as of the time of this recording, we have received enough funding from very generous listeners like you, donors who have made possible at least one full set of one full 8-week course. So that would be, you know, we've been doing it twice a day. Twice a week, and for an hour and a half, and that would be able to go for 8 weeks. But we certainly hope to be able to keep it going. So if you can please share the link, which is also in this episode, and you can find the Latvia Weekly Facebook page as well, also at www.latviaweekly.com. We would be extremely grateful. We know that there are a gajillion different things to donate to right now, especially, you know, during this holiday season, and also one, you know, different very worthy causes that have to do with helping Ukrainians as well. But, you know, definitely if you are able to, or you know someone who's able to help contribute to make this project possible in the year 2023 as well, we would very, very much appreciate it. So, Chris, are there any kind of last thoughts that you'd like to mention before we wrap up this interview episode?
Yeah, I guess I should mention this. Like, for example, if you look at Latvia's history, Latvia has a history of Latvians having to flee the country due to war and oppression and go to other countries. And most people I've met have been very supportive of Ukrainian people who've come here and believed it's the right thing we do. We allow the Ukrainians to take refuge in Latvia. You get the occasional disappointing person who complains that they're getting free public transport or they're getting things given to them for free. I would just say to those people, what if it was you? What if it's you who has to flee Latvia one day and you're the one who needs someone to give you a bed and a house and gives you free public transport? So my advice to people would be, please be as supportive as you can to Ukrainian people. They're going through something horrible, and quite honestly, I think they're amongst our best friends, so they definitely deserve to be assisted.
Yeah, no, I think that's very powerful what you just said, because, you know, I think all of us can look back far enough in our family history and, you know, we've all been there at one point, you know, one point or another, and, you know, we never know when we might be there again in the future. So thank you so much, Chris, for coming out to Jelgava and doing this interview with me. And we are going to go and get lunch. But thank all of you for listening to this episode. If you can, again, like I mentioned, share the link, you know, either, you know, maybe you can share it on Facebook or other social media and let people know about this project. We would very, very much appreciate it, because we would be so happy for the opportunity to, you know, keep Chris teaching the Ukrainian refugees. So thank you once again, and until next time, Visu Labu VCM.